Grace, as with so many of her former colleagues, now became trapped in a vicious circle with each operation incurring yet another bill. Before too long, she had to swallow her pride and ask her parents for money. But the rising medical costs desecrated both her savings and the family's bank account. That spring, USRC too was concerned about money. April seemed rather distant for Drinker's investigation to begin, given the pressing delay in production at the plant. Though Veit had managed to hire an extra 6 girls, it wasn't enough. The executives still had to address the psychological and hysterical situation that was now unfolding in the studio. So, while it waited for Drinker to begin his study, the firm organised its own examinations of the current team of dial painters, conducted by the Life Extension Institute. The girls were tested confidentially, but the reports were shared with the firm. "The individuals concerned," Veit wrote Rhoda, "do not know that we have these copies. Information given in them is very confidential, and they might object to our having them." Though the Institute found some girls had infected teeth, it concluded that their ailments did not reflect any specific occupational influence. Rhoda wrote contentedly to Veit that the results were just as I anticipated. Veit, however, who was more involved in operations at the studio, was not so reassured. "I do not feel quite as optimistic about this matter as you do," he wrote to his boss. "While the Life Extension Institute have made a report, I do not believe that this will satisfy our various operators and that we must wait for Dr. Drinker's final report in order to really convince them that there is no injurious element." Rhoda then added his own 2 cents. "We should create an atmosphere in the plant of competence," he wrote decidedly to Veit. "An atmosphere of confidence is just as contagious as one of alarm and doubt." And he advised that, in his view, the most important action is to see Barry and perhaps others who have been making statements, having jumped at conclusions apparently without thought or knowledge. Veit knew an instruction when he heard one. In late March 1924, he duly paid a visit to Barry and Davidson. The dentists received him coolly. They had no doubt that the agonising condition they were seeing in their patients was due to the girls' former employment at USRC. During Veit's visit, they became outraged by what they considered a cold-blooded attitude. "You ought to close down the plant," Davidson told Veit angrily. "You've made $5 million. Why go on killing people for more money?" Veit had no answer. "If I could have my way," Davidson told him bitterly, "I would close your plant." The dentists weren't the only ones whose interaction with the girls had brought them to the point of frustration. Lenore Young, the Orange health officer, having seen the Department of Labour do nothing with her recommendation that the Public Health Service be called in, now discreetly took matters into her own hands. On 4th of April 1924, she wrote confidentially to Catherine Wiley, the executive secretary of the Consumers League, a national organisation that fought for better working conditions for women. "The authorities are hesitating," Young confided in Wiley. "The Consumers League must keep after them to see that something happens." Wiley was a smart and enterprising woman, in charge of the New Jersey branch of the League. A somewhat plain, dark-haired lady in her early 30s, with features too small for her face, she was a tenacious and driven person.